Welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast, the audio version of the Josh Meister's Lost blog, which you can find at thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Hey everybody, this is the Josh Meister, and welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast. It's been a long time since I've said that. I'm used to saying welcome to Mac Tech Live, because that's the other podcast that I've been doing a lot lately. So anyway, welcome back to the Lost show. It's fun to have Lost back on the air, and we're recording this right after the season 6 premiere, which is called LA Space X. And it's parts 1 and 2. It was a 2-hour premiere. Really, really interesting things that they're doing in this premiere. So we'll get to all the details of the episode in just a moment. One little personal item that I wanted to mention before we get too far underway. Right now I am not able to get Lost at home. If for those who are unaware, there was a digital television transition in the United States, and that happened just after season 5 ended. And basically, for a short amount of time, I was able to kind of get Lost through the digital signal over the airwaves. And for some reason, the past like few months, I've not been able to get ABC at all. I've tried buying, you know, bigger and better antennas, and I've tried positioning them in every which way, and I absolutely cannot even get the faintest ABC signal at all. So for today, I am over at someone else's house to watch the episode and record the podcast. But and next week, by the way, I'm actually going to be in San Francisco at Macworld Expo, so I'm hoping that I can watch the show there. So you'll just kind of have to stay tuned that night, and if I can do the show, if I do get to watch Lost live next week, then I'll do a live show. Otherwise, I might possibly have to skip a week, but I'll do my best to watch it and record a show next week, like normal. But in any case, so after that, I've decided that I've got to be able to watch this at home. I don't want to impose on other people and things like that, and have to drive far in some cases to get to people's houses to watch Lost. And so I went ahead and ordered from my local cable company the basic broadcast channels, the cheapest plan that they had, so I can get ABC. So I'm going to get ABC for about 4 months. But even though it's the cheapest plan that they had, it's still, you know, it's a lot more than I would prefer to pay for TV, especially since, of course, I don't, you know, get paid to podcast about Lost. It's totally a hobby. And so some of you may have already seen my mention of this on Facebook or Twitter, but I am gently asking for donations if you can afford it. And I will stop asking for donations if I reach the amount that will cover the costs of having the broadcast channels at my home for, you know, the next 4 or 5 months, however long Lost is on. So once I hit that point, I won't ask for donations anymore. But if you would like to donate, you totally don't have to. I totally understand. But it really makes it possible for me to be able to do the live show. I'm kind of taking a leap of faith by just going ahead and paying for it and hoping that I'll be able to get a few contributions. So again, totally not required, but if you would like to donate, you can, to help me pay for getting ABC. The links for that are up at the blog. You can either go to thelostmeister.blogspot.com, or alternatively, you can go to lost.thejoshmeister.com. We'll take you there too. All right, so enough about that. That's out of the way. So let's see. Let's dig right into this episode. We don't really have too much as far as like official Lost podcast stuff or anything that I thought was, I don't know, incredibly interesting from the hiatus to talk about. There was one fake alternate reality game on Twitter for a little while. And I think I put up one post about that on my Lost blog. And yeah, so there were some other little things here and there. There was a Lost rewatch, which possibly, if for those who are subscribing to the MP3 podcast feed and you're listening to this there, you may already have heard by now my Lost rewatch episode. I'm planning to record an episode and put it up before I post this episode that will have kind of my rewatch notes. Basically, I'm just I rewatched almost all of season one, and I rewatched parts of some various other episodes from various seasons, mostly season five. I rewatched all the episodes that had the fake John Locke in them, as well as the episode. I think there was only one episode with the real alive John Locke, which was the flashback episode where we saw what happened to John. In any case, so I rewatched a lot of episodes and have a bunch of notes, some interesting things that I noticed watching them again with having everything up through season five in context. So stay tuned for that. If you're not subscribed to the MP3 podcast feed, please subscribe and you'll get that episode. That one will not be recorded live, unlike my usual weekly show. All right, so let's dig into this episode, LAX, with a big old gap in between. So we start out the episode with something that is very confusing, or at least was to me when I was watching it. We start out with apparently 2004 on the Oceanic Flight 815. And it's kind of weird. So Jack's on an airplane. And so at first I'm starting to wonder, wait, so does this mean that it worked? The conversation was a little bit different. The conversation he's having with Cindy, the flight attendant, is not exactly the same as before. So they're not just showing us the same clip. And so I'm kind of trying to figure out what in the world is going on here. And, the thought that comes to mind is, wait, it worked? Especially when Rose and, is talking to Jack, and, apparently someone mentioned in the chat that before we started recording anyway, that the roles are backwards. Where, in the original, I'd forgotten this, but I guess Jack, was trying to comfort Rose, about the turbulence. And in this version of reality, Rose is comforting Jack about the turbulence. And then the plane doesn't crash. It keeps going. Bernard comes back to his seat. And so it goes on. And so we're kind of led to believe that this is the result of what happened at the very end of the season five finale. If you remember Juliet, well, of course you remember because they did show that scene again at the beginning in kind of the previously on Lost. So Juliet hit the bomb, the hydrogen bomb, and it exploded. And so now we start out this season on the plane. So it's they're implying that it worked. It really all happened. The plane doesn't go down. We find out Desmond's on the plane. Which is interesting because he wasn't on Oceanic Flight 815 previously, but now, if he was never stuck on the island because of whatever, I was thinking at the time they showed this, really horrible CG, scene of the island being underwater, including the four-toed foot statue and everything. It's underwater during the time that they're on this plane in 2004. And so Desmond apparently never was stuck on the island. And for some reason he was in Australia and was heading back to Los Angeles. And so he happened to be on the same plane. So what is going on here? So I've got a couple of folks called in, congested. I think you probably had something you wanted to say about that.
And also known as Alex,
AKA Alex.
Say about what specifically, just so I know what you're looking for.
Okay. So, like, What went through your head? I mean, when you see that the island is apparently sunk underwater and the plane doesn't crash.
Right. Well, what was going through my head is basically that when the bomb goes off, you know, the bomb doesn't go off, and when I'm jumping ahead. Well, when I saw my reaction to that moment when I saw it was the bomb went off and that was it. A new timeline was created. But I guess skipping ahead, after the commercial break, what was clear was that there were two timelines. That one, you know, was when the bomb went off, and there's another timeline where the bomb never went off, and the timeline where the bomb never went off is the one that we've been sort of dealing with all along.
Right. And there, we won't necessarily go chronologically through this episode. Well, I think we'll kind of mostly try to go in the order that the episode showed us the scenes, but for the sake of kind of tying all of that together, what you were just talking about, and these kind of alternate timelines. So basically, it seems like what happened is that with the hydrogen bomb going off, it created sort of a rift in the space-time continuum, and now we have two different timelines.
Right.
We have the timeline in where the bomb took out the island somehow, and that was the end of the island. Now it's sunk underwater, and the plane didn't crash. Oceanic Flight 815 never crashed in this timeline. And as you mentioned, after the commercial break, we see this different timeline. And it starts out with Kate in a tree. She can't hear, so we're led to believe, you know, this must be after the bomb went off. And just some kind of weird things going on there. It's weird that I don't know, these people didn't die. They don't have a scratch on them, and they're in Kate's in a tree. It's very, very much like the white, like all of a sudden there was this white light and then people disappeared and showed up somewhere else in a different time. It's exactly like when Ajira Flight 316 crashed on the island, and you've got some of the people who went back in time to 1977, and you've got some people who stayed in 2007. We had the same kind of thing apparently go on here when Juliet hit the bomb, because some of those people went into the future, and interestingly enough, into the future that we're familiar with, where Desmond apparently must have been in the hatch. The hatch imploded because of John Locke and so forth. And it's sort of very weird, because the events that just took place would seem to indicate that that timeline of history never could have happened. However, now these people are showing up in this timeline that isn't plausible, that never should have been able to happen because of what they had done. So in any case, I guess what they're really trying to do here is show that there's this rift in the space-time continuum, and they just had to have some place to throw these characters, otherwise they would be dead in 1977, and that wouldn't be very much fun. So they decided to find some way to throw them back into the timeline that we're
also more familiar with. I mean, sort of just taking it for what it is, it would be a cheat. It would be, you know, that wouldn't be fair to us after spending 5 years, building up all these stories, to just abandon them completely. So they found a way to sort of to reset it, but at the same time to keep what we are familiar with intact.
Yeah. Now, Master Knack is also called in. Master Knack, how's it going tonight?
Hey, pretty good. I'm not used to watching in real time. I usually watch it on a DVR and watch it later, so it's cool I got a chance to call in after seeing it, the episode.
Yeah, so thanks for being here. So you had some interesting thoughts about, you're always really into this time travel stuff too. So, and you're big on like the Back to the Future version of how time travel works. And I see you're posting information about that in the chat. So do you want to explain what your opinion is of basically what's going on, what they're trying to convey in this episode, what's going on with the alternate timelines and things like that?
Right. Okay. Well, Back to the Future Part 2, Marty and Doc go to the future, 2015. In the year 2015, the old version of Biff steals a sports almanac, and he thinks if he goes back to 1955 and gives his young self this almanac, he can be rich and, you know, famous and whatever in the future. Anyway, old Biff goes to 1955, gives young Biff the almanac. He goes back to 2015. Since Marty and Doc are still there, in the 2015 hasn't changed yet, even though this event in the past has already happened. Since Marty and Doc from the original timeline are still in the future, things haven't changed. It's not until they go back to 1985 when suddenly change around them. So maybe something has to do with something similar, since they still exist, since they have been in this timeline where the island has not blown up or whatever, been sunken, since the people who lived in that timeline haven't died, they still exist somehow. In 2007, those events have not changed in the island yet. The island is not sunken, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, it makes sense to me. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are probably scratching their heads right now.
It makes sense to me as well, except I'm still of the thought that they're two totally separate realities at this point. Like they are two, like from that point, there's two separate realities.
So they can't be reconciled?
Well, no. That I think, as far as the end game of Lost goes, there has to be a connection between these two.
Right.
So no, I'm not saying they can't. They have to kind of merge at some point, or something has to happen. I can't imagine what, though. But that I think at this point they're two totally separate timelines. And like Back to the Future's sort of time travel mechanics are unlike Lost in that the people time traveling, in Back to the Future, like if you go back in time and, you know, or go to alternate 1985, you remember everything, whereas in Lost, it's, whatever happened, and even if you go back and try and change time, it doesn't actually change it, you know what I mean? Or am I making sense here?
Well, that's true, but in alternate 1985, although I'm sure for the sake of the writers not, you know, getting themselves into a mess, there were an alternate version of Marty and Doc. We don't see them. Marty is overseas.
True.
Yeah, in the alternate 1985, Marty is overseas and Doc is in an insane asylum. So there was still a different version of themselves, which of course would have no knowledge of, you know, this other version of themselves that's come back in time from 2015. So it could be, I don't know, it might be out there.
I totally forgot about that. That's right. Yeah, that they're still there in the alternate reality. Yeah.
Wow,
so
I'm totally going to have to.
It could be this 2004 version of our survivors could still exist and not know anything about the 2007 version.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's apparent.
Yeah,
I was going to say that's apparent they obviously don't know about each other. There were some moments on the plane where Jack almost seemed to have some sort of like maybe he felt out of place, like he was having deja vu or something, you know. When he saw Desmond, I mean that's explained because, you know, we know that they met each other jogging or what, you know,
right,
years
ago. Arena. Right.
In the arena. But, so there is that. But, I mean, I don't know. Like, the way, like, Jack goes and looks at himself in the mirror and, like, he looks at his shaving cut, it's almost like he's been somewhere else and he's just, like, trying to, like, figure out what's going on in his head. You know? Like, it's not blatant. It's not, like, obvious that. And he obviously doesn't know that something like this, some major thing has happened, but he just kind of acts funny. I don't know. Did anyone else get that impression?
Right. I think it's open to interpretation, sort of. Like, I think we can either read it as him maybe having a sense that something is off, or that, you know, like you said, that he just remembers Desmond but can't quite place it. Like, it could be kind of like either or, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, well, and here's an even different theory. Jenny Lynn in the chat, she's been coming up with a lot of, like, a lot of theories and ideas that are totally different from what I've been thinking of. She suggested that maybe Desmond was actually in Jack's head. And if we're going to go there, we could say this whole alternate timeline, you know, could be in someone's head. Although, you know, now we have everybody splitting off. They're not all on the plane anymore. And so, you know, whose perspective is it? You know, it's kind of like, was it, Libby? I don't know if Libby ever said anything to Hurley like this, but I know we discussed it on the podcast at one point where, you know, people were like, well, maybe the whole island, like Hurley's imagining it all just like he imagined Dave and things like
yeah,
this.
Dave. Like Dave says it to Hurley that you're still in Santa Rosa and there's
yeah.
all going on in your head.
See, if I may interject, I don't think Dave was in his head. I think Dave was a dead person that Hurley was able to see.
Well, now it sure seems like that's a possibility.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Now that we know that Hurley sees dead people, you know, and that's a gift from Jacob, apparently.
Yeah. Maybe that was the first manifestation of that gift.
Right. Well, yeah. You know, I think it's like Hurley was on a like a balcony that crashed, and that's sort of the incident that led to him kind of going crazy and ending up in the mental institution. Maybe Dave was someone who died in the balcony crash or something like that. I don't know.
Or die right. in the institution.
Or, yeah.
Sure.
Or die. Yeah.
Sure, why not? Yeah, that is interesting. Although, if he died in the institution, though, I can't remember the doctor's name, this psychiatrist or psychologist, whoever it was that was working with Hurley, said, he like took a picture and said, Dave doesn't exist. He doesn't say, Dave is dead. He's not alive anymore. You need to like let him go. He says, Dave doesn't exist. He's all in your head. You know,
he might not necessarily have known about that particular patient though.
Well, but wouldn't Hurley have had to know that patient for him to like see these dead people? Cause the only people that he's ever seen who are dead are people who he already knew. Like,
well, what
he
about
saw
Jacob
he saw in the season 5 finale, remember, on the in the taxi.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess that's correct. That's true.
Yeah, I only remembered that because I just watched that episode the other day.
No, you're
well,
right
and of course because Jacob mentions the guitar case too.
Right. Yeah.
In this episode,
I think we kind of come back to the open interpretation thing there with Dave. I mean, you could see it either as Hurley is just imagining this guy, or you know, maybe this guy was part of Hurley's past, and maybe you know, you could even take it a step further and say, well, maybe he really was crazy and imagining Dave before he got to the island, but after he got to the island, it was a dead version of Dave coming back and.
That's a little out there for
enough,
me.
We just don't have enough to go off of on that one.
All right.
Yeah.
So, why don't we try to move on? Let's move on.
Yeah.
Okay. So I mentioned Kate's in a tree. This is some random, you know, we don't really know the date. It's some, or do we? No. Wait. We do know the date. We know it's in 2007 because of something that happened near the end of the episode. Okay. All right. Sorry. I'm putting all this together in my head. So as I was watching the episode, right up until the end of the episode, we don't really know like what year this is, that this alternate timeline where Kate's in a tree and all that stuff happens. But now we know that it's got to be 2007 because later in the episode, they all went to the temple and then they fired a rocket from the temple, and Richard Alpert saw it on the beach, and he's over there with Alana and the Ajira folks. So we do know that it is confirmed now that it's 2007. When I wrote it in my notes, I just wrote unknown date after 2004 because that's, you know, when the hatch.
Jacob did also say when he saw Hurley, he said, "I died an hour ago."
Yes. Right. Well, okay, now that's true. Jacob said I died an hour ago, and of course he's talking about the timeline that they just came from. So they came from 1977, but in their own perception of time, in their own timeline, which is skipping around time, it only happened an hour ago. I mean, if they remembered what happened an hour ago, then it would be that they were in 1977, blah, blah, blah. But in 2007 time also, yeah, exactly. Jacob says, I died an hour ago, and Jacob died in 2007. So, yes. So anyway, that kind of pulls it together between Jacob's comment. And that's a good point. Cause for some reason, it's so confusing sometimes with the time travel thing. And I was thinking that Jacob died an hour ago, but with them in 1977, but no, that happened in 2007. So you're right. So there were two big things that kind of confirmed. Okay. So this other alternate timeline where Kate and everybody else got spat back is in 2007. And it in fact is the same timeline as, where season 5 leaves off. So basically they're just shot back into their own time, like the time that they belong in rather than 1977. Right. So now that's all making a little bit more sense to me. So we've got their 2000, it's 2007. They're on the island, and, this is the timeline that's alternate from the alternate 2004 airplane timeline. So Kate's in a tree. She can't hear, the island apparently didn't sink yet because she's alive. She's on the island. But it's interesting to, it kind of makes me wonder, like, what caused the island to sink. I especially was thinking about that at this particular time in the episode, because I'm like, well, okay, this is obviously after 2004 and the island is not sunk. But of course that was explained sort of later, that apparently these are two alternate timelines, not directly explained, but kind of hinted at that that's what's going on here.
Well, for what it's worth, I don't know if this means anything, but I happened to look up atom bomb testing on Wikipedia. And it was on ships. Granted, it wasn't on like a landmass, but, it was in 1946, the test Baker in July 25th, it sank several ships and some even up to 1800 yards away. And I'm not sure how big, like, the island is space-wise, but...
You cannot sink an island with an atom bomb or a hydrogen bomb or whatever. I'm sorry.
The island is mobile, though. I don't know. I mean, it might
be
out there.
That's a good point.
But...
Yeah.
They're going for. I think that's what they're implying. But I call BS on that one.
I just wanted to see if it was theoretically possible.
I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah. No, I tend to agree with Master Knack on this one. I think what we're supposed to think is that in the 2000, well, okay. So what happened in the season 5 finale in 1977 when Juliet hit the bomb, the hydrogen bomb, what we're supposed to believe after seeing the 2004, revisited, alternate timeline of 2004, and we see that the island is sunk. I mean, it could be a different event. It doesn't really matter.
I agree with both of you guys that we're led to believe that a bomb has sunk the island. I think that's what they're kind of going for. I think it's just like, I think it's stupid. but I think that's what we're supposed to think, especially since you see the Dharma shark and you see the swing set. So it's like clearly like the island sank after Dharma was around, which was, so like it sank when she set the bomb off, because the stuff that, Dharma set up there was there in the sunken version of the island. Does that make sense?
Yes, I think so.
Are you following me?
Well, I'm kind of trying to like follow the, like read through the chat and my notes and listen to you at the same time. So,
okay.
The houses and the Dharma shark and all that would have been around before 1977, which is when the bomb went off, right?
Right. That's my point. Exactly. So, like, that would mean that the island was, quote-unquote, above ground, the island was up and running, basically, up until the bomb went off. So in the reality where the bomb went off, the island sinks when the bomb goes off, which makes no sense, but let's just say it makes sense for a second. That's sort of what they're implying, that the island is, underwater after the bomb went off, but only after the bomb went off.
Right, exactly.
There's a comment in the chat from, I call him Spivvy to avoid confusion with my own name since his name is also Josh. But Josh from The Lost Flashbacks, a.k.a. Spivvy, says in the chat, you can sink one, I think he means the island, but the houses and the foot, meaning the foot statue, would be gone. And yeah, he's probably right about that. All right, so... So Kate is running around the island. She runs into Miles, and Miles having trouble hearing too. They, discover that the swan hatch is imploded. And so this is when we first get the hint that they're in 2007 or at the very least, you know, after 2004, which we do get confirmed that it's 2007, the same 2007 timeline as this season 5 finale, 2007, Ajira, all that stuff. So, okay, Jack is lying in the dirt. And so this is where it really starts to get confusing because it's like, wait, Jack was just on the plane. So this is another hint that there's alternate timelines going on here. Sawyer is really mad at Jack, obviously, because Juliet is dead, or so he thinks. Back on the plane, Sawyer sees, Kate in handcuffs, and of course that kind of comes up a little bit later. Dr. Arst, Leslie Arst, sees Hurley, and, you know, recognizes him from, you know, the Mr. Klux commercials that apparently Hurley has been in because he owns the Mr. Klux chain. And so Arst gets Hurley to do his Mr. Klux commercial, Australian accent. So it's kind of funny to see Hurley doing his, you know, Australian accent. And then, so Arst asks Hurley, how he, you know, he became the owner of the Mr. Klux franchise and so forth. And Hurley says, I won the lottery. And then Sawyer, you know, comments to Hurley, you know, you might not want to go around telling everybody that you won the lottery because people will try to take advantage of you. And of course, who, you know, would know that better than the con man himself, Sawyer. But Hurley shrugs it off, and his line is really interesting. He says something to the effect of, nothing bad ever happens to me, like I have incredible luck or something like that, which is obviously very different from the Hurley on the Oceanic 815 that we all have known for the first 5 seasons. You know, obviously the numbers must have really been cursed, or the island somehow is cursing him, for using the numbers, or however you want to explain that. But, apparently in this timeline, with the island sunk, the numbers have no control over Hurley, and he's free and he has incredible luck. And Congested, needs to take off. It is, after all, 3:44 a.m.
Yeah,
where he
exactly.
is. So.
Yeah.
So thanks, Alex, for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. And I'll, you know, try and tune in again later this season, or, you know, as soon as possible.
All right. Hope to have you again soon.
All right. See you.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Okay. So getting back to the alternate timeline on the island, Juliet is alive under the rubble. We hear her voice. This is interesting. So she was dead, so we thought, now she's alive again. Okay. That didn't last long, unfortunately. And Saeed is dying, and he's afraid of where he'll end up because of torturing people, etc. He talks about kind of the afterlife and, you know, basically tells Hurley, I don't think I'm going to be going to any place that is going to be any good because of what I've done to people in my lifetime. Well, it's kind of interesting because he seems to end up dying, but, yeah, so we'll get back to that when we get to that chronologically here. So, and then Jacob shows up. So Saeed sort of passes out and Jacob shows up and, talks to Hurley, says, hello, Hugo, got a minute? And back on the plane, one of the things that happened is, Boone is talking to Locke, and it's kind of funny because Neil Frogert is taking a nap in between them on the plane. And, Boone sort of explains why Shannon isn't there in this particular alternate reality, in this particular timeline of reality. Let's see. Back on the island, the fake lock tells Ben, according, and this is picking up where we left off with the season 5 finale, you can stop staring at the fire. Jacob's gone. He's gone. And interestingly enough, it was pointed out, I don't know, I read somewhere, someone pointed out that you don't actually see Jacob's body in the fire, which I guess could be explained a number of different ways. Let's say for, you know, the sake of argument for a moment that perhaps, okay, so we found out that the fake lock is the smoke monster. That was confirmed in this episode. I kind of already suspected that based on, my rewatching of season 5 and the scene where John Locke, you know, so-called, goes with Ben underneath the perimeter of the temple, and Locke goes off to get something to help get Ben, you know, up out of the pit. And as soon as he disappears, the smoke comes out, and then there's Alex, and Alex says, you know, you have to trust John Locke and do whatever he tells you to do, or I'm going to kill you. And then John Locke comes back immediately after, almost immediately after Alex disappears. So there's, you know, there's kind of was a hint there. Having what we know from the season 5 finale, going back and watching that episode, it was a bit more clear that that's probably what was going on there. That, in fact, this fake John Locke was the smoke monster and was this Alex that came back to talk to Ben. So it was all a scam. The smoke monster, or whatever you want to call him, is playing different roles. He was playing John Locke, and he played Alex. And all of this was to convince Ben to kill Jacob. That was the loophole that Jacob's nemesis found, was getting somebody else to do his dirty work for him. All right. So fake Locke, anyway. So this is what I was going to say there. Fake Locke says Jacob's gone, and yet we don't see him, any evidence of a charred body in the fire. So when Bram comes in a few minutes and shoots at fake Locke, you know, he ducks behind a pillar, and all that remains of Locke is this, you know, this bullet that was shot into him, or so it seemed. And then, well, you know, momentarily, then the smoke comes flooding into the room, and it's basically explained shortly after that, confirmed that he is, yes, in fact, the smoke monster. It's the same person. What were you going to say, Knack?
Oh, just to jump in, I don't know if you noticed, but the bullet was actually bent, which to me, yes, made it sound more like it bounced off of him.
Oh, interesting. Well, what I was thinking was that, I don't know, I've been watching a lot of episodes of Mythbusters recently, and they often are firing bullets into things. I was just figuring that that was, I mean, the bullet was bent, as you say, like, but it's not too different, I don't think, from, like, say, a bullet getting lodged in the person's body, you know, and kind of hitting bone or whatever. So, I mean, the bullet could have very well gone into this fake Locke. I mean, we know he was a physical, real, like, tangible person because, for example, the eating the mango. That was the first time that we saw this fake Locke, you know, on the beach in that episode.
Yeah.
Or I guess maybe it was the second time. Anyway, but oh, okay. Well, and here's a question from the chat. So Ratface in the chat says, "Fake Locke can only turn into the smoke monster if someone shoots at him." No. That's not at all what I was getting at. So no, I think he can turn into whatever form anytime he wants, as evidenced again by you know, when they went under the temple. John just walked off, and now he was Smoke, and now he's Alex, and now he's Locke again. I think he can change at the drop of a hat. They're not showing him morphing because, frankly, I think the CG would look horrible. I mean, people complain enough about the computer-generated graphics, you know, that they sometimes have on Lost, and that, I'm sure, would look absolutely terrible to show him morphing from one being into another. But in any case, So what I was getting at with the whole bullet thing and all that, so I think the bullet went into this physical body, but then the body disappeared because that's what the smoke monster is capable of doing. And then he came back in his other form as this smoke monster. And go ahead.
It's interesting if it did go on his body that there was no visible wound afterward.
Well, yeah, but he reformed as Locke. I mean, I don't know. The TV I was watching it on wasn't really, you know, super high quality. So I couldn't tell whether there was a bullet hole or a wound before he disappeared behind the pillar. But at least when he reconstituted himself as Locke, there was no bullet wound that I can recall. But
yeah,
in any case,
so, just cover it up.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, this is sort of a facade. It's like a fake body, you know. So I'm sure he can do whatever he wants with it. He can make himself look like anybody, apparently, or at least anybody dead, as evidenced by the many other times where we've seen the smoke monster turn into dead people, like right. Yemi, for example. So, all right. Anyway, so what I was going to say is that if fake Locke / smoke monster / Jacob's nemesis, it really makes me mad that we didn't get a name for him in this episode because we're still going to have to call him by all these different names until we get his name. But we don't know if he and Jacob are sort of the same type of being. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that Jacob and this other guy are not, they may be human, but they're different somehow because obviously they live for a really long time and Jacob can only be killed under certain circumstances. And apparently the same could be said for the smoke monster or whatever you want to call him, because you can't shoot him and have him die. So there, in any case, there's some special way to kill them. Otherwise they seem to be immortal. So if the fake Locke, Jacob's nemesis, can disappear at the drop of a hat and take some other form, why not Jacob? I mean, maybe he disappeared. It's weird. I mean, like, at the very least, you'd kind of expect to see charred remains or something in the fire, but you don't see anything. There's no, at least I didn't, there wasn't any obvious hint of a dead body in the fire. That was a little bit weird. I'm glad somebody pointed that out because I hadn't really noticed that watching the episode. But in any case, so fake Locke says he's gone. Ben asks, why didn't he fight back? Why did he let me just kill him? And fake Locke says, I guess he knew he was beaten. Now, this is interesting. I mean, obviously, this is fake Locke's idea. This is what he assumes is going on. And he assumes this is Jacob's motive, but it kind of makes me wonder because I don't know that Jacob's nemesis has really won. He seems to have killed Jacob, but at the same time,
could it be the Obi-Wan Kenobi effect?
Exactly. It's kind of exactly where I was going. You said it way better than I was going to say it. But yes, exactly like Obi-Wan Kenobi, like, you know, strike me down and I will become more powerful than you can possibly imagine kind of thing, you know. So now he's this sort of Obi-Wan, you know, character to Hurley, or, you know, he's like Obi-Wan was to Luke as, you know, Jacob now is to Hurley. It's kind of what I'm trying to say. That's interesting. So now, but on the other hand, you know, what would have been so bad about Jacob not dying? I mean, why did he need to take this form? I mean, is it all part of Jacob's plan? Does he have some secret meaning? Josh, again, from Lost Flashback said, what did Jacob mean by their coming, which were his final words? I assumed that he was talking about his friends, his protectors, Ilana and Bram and so forth. I assumed that that's what he meant by that. In fact, I assumed that when we were watching the season 5 finale, and I still kind of think that that's probably what he meant. Although, yeah, it's not super duper dramatic. I mean, maybe he meant something about the time travel and all that kind of stuff, but I don't know. In any case, well, here's another thought, though. Well, no, scratch that. Let's just go on. So, Jenny Lynn, once again, with the off-the-wall theories that actually are kind of plausible. This is cool. So, Jenny Lynn says, there will be white smoke. I believe that is what John saw in season one and Sun saw when she got back to... Sorry, I'm going to have to copy and paste because of TalkShoe's limitations. They don't show me the full thing unless I copy and paste it. When John saw in season one and Sun saw when she got back to Dharmaville. Okay. I don't know necessarily about the second one, but John seemed to have seen... Well, he said, I looked into the eye of the island and what I saw was beautiful. And it's sort of, you know, and there's a sort of scene where whatever it is, what we thought maybe was the monster at the time, seems to be getting bright. We only see it from the perspective of whatever being that was looking down at John. But if I remember right, and it's been a while since I've seen that episode, a few months, I guess. But I think there was kind of this sort of bright light, right? And then, maybe there's a white smoke monster, you know, maybe that is Jacob. I mean, the white and dark, you know, the light and dark, you know, kind of goes along with the, obviously it's a theme of Lost, but also the shirts or tunics or whatever it was that they were wearing in the season five opening scene, season five finale opening scene, where Jacob and his nemesis are on the beach together. Jacob is wearing a light-colored shirt, and the nemesis is wearing dark-colored. So I think that's kind of what Jenny Lynn is getting at here. So if there's this dark smoke monster, maybe there's a white smoke that Jacob can take. So that's interesting. Okay, so let's see here. Yes, and I started making a note of this in my notes during the episode. Richard shows Ben the dead body of Locke. So Ben, you know, is starting to put the pieces together now and figure out that he's been totally duped and that that's not really Locke whose orders he's following. All right, so let's see, where are we now? Okay, well, I guess we're still 2007 timeline on the island, but we're now going back to the folks who just flashed, you know, came from the past back to their own time in 2007. This is so confusing to try to explain. But yeah, okay. So there's two 2007 things going on in this episode that are both apparently happening simultaneously. Anyway, so this is what happened when two of the people who came back from the past. Okay, so Jacob tells Hurley that Jin won't be able to see him, meaning, you know, Jin won't be able to see Jacob because he, Jacob, died an hour ago. And he said, that he was killed by an old friend, and, you know, who he said something like, who didn't want anything to do with me anymore, obviously referring to Ben. Interesting that he referred to him as an old friend because, or was he talking about Ben? Because Ben tells Locke in the season five finale, that
Jacob had been ignoring him.
Yeah, and that he had never seen Jacob. I think I don't know if that was in the finale or shortly before that. There was an episode toward the end of season five, anyway, where Ben tells fake Locke that he's never seen Jacob. Really? Jacob. Yeah.
I thought back in the cabin. I thought the whole scene in the cabin when he first brought Locke to Jacob. I thought Ben could see him but not hear him, and Locke could hear him but not see him.
Okay, well, now that brings up a whole bunch of points of conversation, but to address that point first, I don't think Ben saw anything at all. I think what we saw was something for the viewers to see, you know, this sort of flash of a person in a chair, I don't think Ben saw anything. Or maybe he did. I don't know. I kind of remember thinking at the time that Ben saw and Locke heard, but then,
Ben makes some comment that he's never heard Jacob or something like that.
You're right. And I think what was explained was, so I don't remember if it was at that time or later, but in some way, Ben basically explained that he never actually saw Jacob. And so in that episode where they went to so-called Jacob's cabin, which it turns out this is not Jacob's cabin after all. This is actually the Nemesis's cabin. This is the cabin where Alana and Bram, you know, had, I don't know if them in particular, but in any case, Jacob's friends had trapped him there, because we know there was ash around the cabin. And right. In the season 5 finale, they say, you know, he hasn't been here for a long time. We assume they're talking about Jacob, because we always thought this was Jacob's cabin. But, you know, maybe Jacob lived there at some point, but that's not who they were talking about. They're talking about the Nemesis, because they had apparently trapped him in this cabin at some point. So what in the heck? Like, when John Locke heard the voice saying, "Help me," was that Jacob or was that the Nemesis?
Interesting.
Dun, dun, dun! that sort of just occurred to me, like, when I was watching the episode. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, I'm trying to explain this to my parents. Like, I was at my, I'm still recording this at my parents' house before I make my trek home. but yeah, so I'm trying to explain to my parents that, you know, what's going on. And then all of a sudden these like revelations are coming to me. I'm like, oh, that explains. Okay. So yeah. So the ash around the cabin, that's right. That was in, you know, the season 5 finale. And so, yeah, anyway, so I think that's what's really going on there. If any of that makes sense out of all my ramblings.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. And
so does that mean if Ben never really saw or heard Jacob, was the Man in Black communicating with him the whole time?
I don't know. That's a really good question.
Was it every time that Ben said Jacob wants this, that he was just making all that up?
That's a really good question. I mean, obviously Ben was making up some things, but I don't know. That's very, very hard to try to figure out, because, for example, I mean, there's so many examples we could give, but there was one where, what was his name? One of the others said to Jason, Shepherd wasn't even on Jacob's list. That was the first time we heard the name Jacob. And Ben provided this list, apparently, that he got from Jacob somehow. And Ben added on Jack Shepherd, basically, in you know, when it came to who the others should go retrieve from the Flight 815 survivors. Ben was the one who specifically requested Jack Shepherd because he needed a spinal surgeon to remove his tumor. And so it's interesting that, gosh, what's his name? I know the character's name, and it's been so long. The one who was like apparently together with Colleen. Gosh, I can't think of his name. Anyways, that's going to drive me crazy. Anyway, so he says that Shepherd wasn't even on Jacob's list. And so that implies that Ben really went and got a list from Jacob and then added Jack Shepherd's name to it when giving them the list of people to go get. And so if Ben was just straight out lying the whole time and saying that, you know, that, I mean, why would he just have said Jacob wants Jack Shepherd? Ah, there you go. Danny Pickett. Thank you. Josh in the Josh Spivy from Lost Flashbacks in the chat said yes, that was Danny Pickett. Thank you. All right. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Who was talking to Ben then? Was it Jacob? Was it the Nemesis? Since Ben apparently went to the Nemesis's cabin rather than Jacob's cabin after all. I don't know. This is so confusing. And I think part of the problem there is just that I think the writers, I mean, you know, you've got so many people writing these episodes. I think they probably were confused and didn't really think everything through perfectly the first time around. And that may explain some of these weird discrepancies like that. So I don't know. That's probably not going to ever be fully answered because I suspect that that's probably more a writing error than anything else.
Well, if Ben, assuming it wasn't, if Ben was talking to the Nemesis, I mean, I guess that would make sense why Jacob had ignored him.
Well, maybe, but then, I mean, Ben's going to the wrong place, like where he thinks he's going. I mean, where he's going to communicate with whom he thinks is Jacob is the wrong place. So he never even, maybe the reason that Jacob never communicated with him is because he never went to Jacob. He never actually went to where Jacob really is. And I don't know. It's so weird because, like Richard Alpert, he knew where Jacob really lived, because he told fake Locke, you know, when supposedly Locke comes around and says, I'm going to go see Jacob, then, you know, Richard says, okay, I guess I'll have to take you there then. And so Richard always knew that he was hiding, you know, was living underneath the foot statue. And yet, you know, and yet we've got Ben in the past who had been supposedly taking orders from Jacob, and yet, you know, he didn't even know apparently where Jacob lived. I don't know. There's so many things that just don't make sense when you try to put those pieces together. So I think we better move on from that point. Yeah. You're right. Something doesn't fit.
This is moving on somewhat. Richard seems to know all the answers. Could he be the same type of being as Jacob and the Nemesis? Like maybe he's like a third neutral party in the whole
thing? Well, possibly. Okay, so we do get one little hint about Richard's origin in this episode. Near the end of the episode, fake Locke says it's something about, he says it's good to see you out of those chains. Now, there was a theory a long time ago. The only way that we've ever seen Richard Alpert look, other than with his current, you know, haircut and all that, he did once have long hair in a Ben flashback when Ben was a kid on the island. And that was the very first time that Ben meets any of the hostiles. And at that time, Richard Alpert had long hair. So, the way he was dressed, some people thought that maybe Richard Alpert was somebody who somehow survived after all these years from the Black Rock, meaning the ship. And so maybe he was a slave on the Black Rock. Another maybe hint at that was, you know, again, the opening scene of the season 5 finale, where we see this ship off in the distance and Jacob and his nemesis are talking about this ship and how, you know, apparently Jacob invited them there, or brought them there, however they put it. So maybe that's where Richard Alpert comes from. He wasn't there during that conversation, but, maybe he was on that ship. Maybe he was a slave on the ship, and that's how Richard Alpert sort of became, Jacob's friend and sidekick and whatever else. I think that's what we're ultimately going to find out if they ever do end up revealing Richard's origin. I think that's probably what we'll discover, is that he, in fact, was a slave on the Black Rock. That's a good question. So what is his current origin? Meaning, like, whether he can turn into a smoke monster or whatever. I mean, I don't think we've really gotten any evidence of that. We know he can leave the island anytime he wants, like Jacob could. But then again, it seems like anybody can leave the island anytime as long as they go on the sub. So, I don't know. Let's see here. Okay. So, back in the... I'm just going to say, continuing on with 2007 on the island, Jacob tells Hurley that Jin won't be able to see him. Okay, I did talk about that. Jacob tells Hurley to get Jin to take Saeed and the rest of the people to the temple, where they'll be safe, and to bring the guitar case. The reason that Jacob tells Hurley to get Jin is because Jacob knows that Jin has been to the temple. He knows where it is because of the one of the many jumps through time on the island where Jin was there with Danielle, a young Danielle, and Montan, and these other, you know, the other French expedition folks. Somehow Jacob knows that Jin. Know that Jin was there, and he's been to the temple and knows where it is. So Hurley asks Jin if he would know what he was talking about if he said, you know, the hole whatever in the ground outside the temple, something like that. And Jin goes, yeah. And Hurley goes, you know, responded like he was obviously thinking to himself, huh, that's weird. Like, funny that, you know, I mean, obviously Jacob knows what he's talking about. Jin knows about this place and I've never heard of it. So, all right. So the 2004 timeline, back on the plane, Cindy asks for calls over the plane speaker system and asks if there is a doctor and says, you know, nobody needs to panic, but we're looking for a doctor. And so Jack buzzes for the flight attendant to come. Cindy comes to get him. And apparently there's somebody locked in the airplane lavatory. And Saeed volunteers to kick down the door for them. And apparently Charlie is inside. And not only has he been doing drugs, but apparently he tried to commit suicide. He's nearly dead. In fact, I thought he was dead when they showed him. But Jack saves his life and, he fishes out of Charlie's throat a bag of heroin. And, so after Jack saves his life, Charlie says, terrific. So he'd actually tried to kill himself, by blocking his airway with a bag of heroin. This is kind of weird because he doesn't kill himself when he gets to the island in season one, you know, like, so this may kind of have something to do with what we talked about, how obviously the chain of events that has happened up to 2004, in this alternate timeline have been different. We know Shannon's not on the plane. We know Desmond for some reason is on the plane. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that have kind of happened in the past that have been different. But for some reason, in this particular alternate timeline of 2004, Charlie wanted to commit suicide on the plane, tried to kill himself, and was disappointed, was upset that Jack actually saved his life. Okay, so getting back to the 2007 timeline, Bram and his friends battle with Jacob, and they get killed. They shoot at Fake Locke, he disappears, and the bullet is left behind. And I noticed that a couple of them are trying to put ash around themselves to protect themselves, which I thought, oh, come on, like, that's really going to work. I mean, somehow, you know, Jacob's nemesis got out of the cabin and so forth. I'm like, do you really think that ash on the ground is going to keep him out? And, Bram succeeds in putting an ash ring around himself, and the monster doesn't cross it. But he did something. He like smashed something or shook the room somehow, and he knocked Bram out of the circle. And then, of course, Bram died. So
he caused. I think what happened is he caused a rock to fall from the ceiling, and the rock is what knocked him out of the circle. If I saw it correctly.
Well, wasn't the rock also what killed him? I mean, he got impaled by some big rock or something.
I think there were a couple of rocks, but I think the first one knocked him out, and then the second one actually impaled him.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of back and forth. I was trying to, like, type my notes at the same time as watching the screen, so I did have my eyes off the screen, you know, for a few split seconds, and I missed part of that. But in any case, so basically, Bram is dead. The Ash Ring didn't really help, because even though the monster didn't directly want to cross it, he was able to work around it and find some other way to kill Bram. But it is interesting, though. I mean, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, like, what the heck this Ash Ring has to do with anything. Like, if you stick ash around something and the nemesis for some reason can't pass by there, why? It's so weird. What I suspect is, at the end of the episode, the nemesis reveals to Ben that he cannot get off the island. And he talks about the irony of how that's exactly what John Locke wanted. He's in John Locke's form now, but he wants exactly the opposite of what John Locke wanted. Rather than wanting to be on the island, he actually wants to get off the island and go home, is what he says. So apparently the nemesis, his home is off the island, and he wants to go back home, which is weird, because you would think that after being on the island for hundreds of years or longer, that wherever his home is probably going to be different now. Assuming, of course, that he's talking about his home being someplace on Earth. But anyways.
Lasky mentions Bram fell on the wooden loom, and that's what impaled him, not a rock.
Ah, okay. Thanks, LostGeek108. Ratface in the chat says, Bram should have eaten that ash. Maybe he would still be alive. Oh, boy. Okay, let's see. What else have we got here? So, after Bram dies, let's see. Okay, so, getting back to the whole the ash circle thing, really briefly. So, I don't know if I mentioned this exactly while we were recording, but I put in my notes, I was kind of trying to hash out all of my thoughts about the Ash Ring and things like that. But the Ash was meant to keep Jacob's nemesis trapped inside the cabin. And so in the season 5 finale, Bram and Alanis' team discovered that the Ash circle surrounding the cabin had been disturbed. Which, you know, of course meant that the nemesis was free to leave. And they also discovered, according to Alana's assessment, nobody had been there for a long time, had lived there for a long time, I think is how she put it. Which is interesting because, I mean, is this smoke monster nemesis guy actually alive in the same sense that humans are alive? I mean, is he human but in some sort of weird altered state or something? Who knows? In any case.
And remember, somebody mentioned earlier in the chat, I can't remember who it was, we did see the smoke monster way before we even heard of the cabin, in which, you know, assuming it's the same one, leads you to believe at some point during the events, you know, of the show, he got trapped by someone somehow in the cabin. So he wasn't always there from the beginning.
Interesting. Well, okay, let's go on. Fake Locke, after the smoke monster then disappears, Fake Locke appears again and says to Ben, I'm sorry you had to see me like that, meaning in that form of, you know, the smoke. I don't think I put it in my notes, but I think it was a little bit later in the episode, you know, Ben refers to the smoke monster as, I think he says, the monster. So you're the monster or something like that. And, Jacob's nemesis seems kind of offended by that term. He's like, you know, I don't remember his exact line, but basically it was something to the effect of like, hey, don't call me a monster. Like, you know, what's your problem? I can't wait to find out his name. I'm so sick of calling him the nemesis, the smoke monster. And people in the chat keep calling him MIB, which always makes me think of Men in Black. But it's supposed to be, I guess, Man in Black is the abbreviation. So I'm like, Men in Black? What? Like, I keep having to read all these comments in the chat about MIB and thinking, Men in Black? What is that? Oh, you're not talking about the movie. Got it. Okay. You're talking about the Man in Black. Okay. I kind of like Nemesis. I think that's currently what they refer to him as on Lostpedia, or at least as of, like, last week. I think the article title is currently Jacob's Nemesis, which makes makes sense. So, all right. Okay, so back in the 2004 airplane timeline. Oh, no, sorry. Gosh, I'm going to have to change my notes all around. I'm so confused. Okay. So still in 2007, but a different place on the island. Sawyer rescues Juliet, but she's dying. And Juliet, in like her final words to Sawyer are, I have to tell you something that's really, really important. And then, of course, she dies. So Sawyer and Kate glare at Jack as Sawyer holds Juliet's lifeless body. And Sawyer says to Jack, "You did this." Once again, blaming Jack for Juliet's death a second time in less than an hour. about a different supposed death. So anyway. But this time, I'm going to say that it's, I think that Juliet really is dead. I mean, if there was any hope of her coming back to life, well, obviously they buried her body. She is officially dead. And, you know, one piece of evidence of that is that the actress who plays Juliet, is on a different TV show now, also on ABC. So yeah, I don't think we're going to be seeing Juliet again. Not to mention that, you know, we also have heard from both Richard Alpert and Ben that they've never heard of anybody coming back to life before on the island or anywhere else. Dead is dead is how Ben puts it to Sun. And Richard says more or less the same thing when he's talking directly to fake Locke, thinking that it is Locke. He's like, you know, how is it that you're alive? And then Richard theorizes that Jacob made it so that Locke could be alive. Obviously, Richard was wrong about that. Okay, so 2004, back on the plane. So Charlie's mad at Jack for saving his life. The plane lands safely in this alternate version of 2004. And men come on board the plane. They are coming to arrest Charlie. Not surprisingly, you know, he was obviously in possession of illegal narcotics. And so now not only is he not going to be dead, it wasn't successful in killing himself, but now he's also probably going to jail. So that stinks to be Charlie. Locke is one of the last people off the plane. And of course, it's because they have to bring one of those little airplane aisleway wheelchairs in for him. And so they have to get the other passengers off first. And Locke and Jack are apparently the last people off the plane. So Jack sees that Locke's in the wheelchair. Boone, however, who is talking to Locke on the plane, didn't even realize that Locke was crippled. And Locke, of course, is lying and telling his whole story about how he went on this walkabout and all this stuff. Well, I think we can be reasonably certain that even in this alternate timeline, he probably really didn't get to trek around the island because he's confined to a wheelchair. And I don't think that a wheelchair would be able to get around all kinds of places in the outback and so forth. So, I put a note here in this particular spot in my show notes. We may have kind of sort of touched on this at the beginning of the podcast, but I wrote in my notes, the plane timeline can't fit with the island timeline because Richard told Sun in season 5 that he watched Jen and the others die in 1977, 30 years ago. But then Richard is alive on the island in 2007 in order to, well, for one thing, to be able to tell them that. That in and of itself doesn't really make any sense because if Richard was there on the island when the hydrogen bomb went off, based on what we've seen from this new alternate 2004 timeline, either the bomb or something else that happened after that sunk the island. And I think most people would probably assume that it was the bomb, although that doesn't seem to be reconcilable with, you know, the fact that Richard is alive in 2007 telling Sun, I watched them die 30 years ago. That doesn't make really any sense at all. And I don't know if that line was a mistake in the writing. Again, I mean, there's so many things. When you get into time travel theory, there's going to be discrepancies. There's no two ways about it. You try to develop a complex plot based around time travel, you're going to have mistakes. Now, Josh Spivey in the chat says, well, they did vanish. And yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, there was the sort of white flash thingy that happened just like, again, like I said, on board the Ajira flight, there was a big white flash and they went back in time. And now when Juliet hit the bomb, there was a big white flash and now they went back to where they're supposed to be in the present, you know, the present being 2007, of course, in the context of the show. So I don't know. This is very odd. for Richard to be able to say, I watched them die, and yet he didn't die somehow, and the island should have been sunk, assuming that that's what sunk the island, was the bomb going off, and yet Richard somehow is still there in 2007. And yet, we also have this plane timeline where apparently the island was sunk. So, I don't know. It's very weird, but it's very difficult to reconcile Richard's statement about watching them die, which, as Congested pointed out before we even started recording, even that line doesn't make any sense because Richard wasn't there at the Swan Station when Juliet set off the bomb. So unless he was watching from the trees somewhere nearby, he didn't really see Jin and the others die. And so even that line doesn't really even seem to make a lot of sense. So maybe there's a problem with just that one line. I don't know. But that seems to confuse a lot of things and basically seems to make it impossible for the 2004 version of this timeline to ever have happened. But then again, you know, apparently they create a rift in time and space and whatever else. So the writers are taking a lot of liberties, I think, with this whole time travel thing. Either that or they're making mistakes in writing lines, like, for example, as I mentioned, Richard Alpert's line. Well, now, here's kind of an interesting point. Okay, so Josh also mentions in one universe, the bomb did go off, meaning the 2007 timeline, and in the other, it did not, meaning the 2004 timeline. So in the 2004 timeline is when Richard told Sun, oh gosh, I'm getting so confused now, is when Richard told Sun that they died 30 years ago, that he watched them die. So I don't know. I mean, I get that there's alternate timelines, but if he watched them die, wouldn't he have died too? Like, I don't, and if the island was sunk, maybe it wasn't even sunk, but I don't know. Who knows? This is so difficult to try to comprehend, like, especially in the context of that line from Richard Alpert that really throws me off. Okay, so the plane timeline doesn't seem to fit with the island timeline because Richard told Sun season 5 that he watched Jin, etc. die, but then Richard is alive on the island in 2007, and yet in 2004 the island is sunk and Desmond was never in the hatch. Alright, so back to 2007 on the island, Sawyer is going to bury Juliet and he asks Miles to help him out, and again, apparently Juliet's really dead. Dead is dead, according to Richard and Ben, and the actress who plays Juliet is on another show now, so I would say absolutely dead. Under the temple, there are some dead people. Some of them have packs. One has a book, and we'll talk about what that book is in a little bit when we get to Easter eggs. One of the bodies that's in the pit under the temple is Montan from Daniel Rousseau's French team, and he is of course missing his arm, and Jin knows why his arm was ripped off, and explains that that was when happened when he was attacked by the black smoke. They are taking Saeed around a hole that falls into a deeper pit, and this hole in the floor made me think that that's probably where Ben fell in. If you remember, while we were talking about not too long ago about how, you know, when he saw supposedly Alex telling him to follow every word that John Locke says, that's probably the same hole that Ben fell down, would be my guess. Kate hears noises in the cave, in the hole, whatever. She wanders off. She disappears suddenly, and Jack tries to find her. And then as he's trying to find Kate, Hurley and Jin are suddenly missing. And then someone knocks out Jack. And we find out that some men apparently took them all at gunpoint. And I was thinking at this point, okay, these have got to be probably Jacob's people, right? Because, you know, Jacob sent Hurley to go to the temple. And then sure enough, we see what looks an awful lot like a temple. And Hurley says, I guess this is the temple. Good line. Thanks, Hurley. So back in 2004, this is after the plane lands safely. Kate undoes her handcuffs in the restroom and escapes from Edward Mars, who, by the way, is kind of a wimp and kind of stupid. Because not only does he give Kate complete and total privacy, giving her plenty of opportunity for her to try to get out of the handcuffs, but he also is a weakling and kind of, you know, he can't seem to handle himself when Kate knocks him out very easily. So, come on, Edward Mars, what's going on, man? You're a marshal. You should be able to handle a little girl like Kate. But anyway. Sawyer knows that she was in cuffs on the plane, and he catches a glimpse of one of the cuffs still attached to her wrist as they are in an elevator together. And a couple of airport security folks say, they hear over the radio, there's a 341, and Sawyer asks what that means, and they say it's confidential, but I think he is pretty certain, and I think we can be pretty certain, that they're looking for Kate at this point. That's what probably the 341 means. Okay, so back in 2007, Sawyer asks Miles, revealing the reason that he asked Miles in particular to help him bury Juliet. Sawyer asks Miles to tell him what Juliet was about to say, because, of course, Miles talks to dead people. However, you know, Sawyer's mad and basically compelling Miles to do this, and we also know that Miles can lie. But he really starts to shake, and we sort of, at least I got the impression that he really did hear Juliet's voice. And according to Miles, what Juliet says is, it worked. That's what she wanted to tell you. It worked. And so Sawyer starts to wander off, and Miles just sits there puzzled. But apparently it did work. I mean, I don't know how Juliet knew that. I mean, I guess as she's having this, as she's about to die, she must be having some sort of a near-death experience where she has obtained some knowledge from the other side or something like that. But Juliet realizes that it really did work. And basically what that means, apparently, I mean, the only thing that I can understand that it could mean is that they were taken back to their timeline, which is now the alternate timeline. The real timeline, apparently now, I guess, kind of in quotation marks, since there's multiple timelines, or multiple sort of outcomes that all could have theoretically existed. And so we're seeing two outcomes related to this anyway. So I don't even know. I'm kind of losing my train of thought here. It is pretty close to 2 o'clock and that's in the Pacific time zone. So I'm kind of losing my mind a little bit as it's getting later. But anyway, so Juliet says it worked. And apparently she's right. Okay. So if we take that in if we assume that Miles is telling the truth and that's really what Juliet says, and assuming that Juliet really has some sort of insider knowledge, from beyond the veil, then I guess what we're seeing with all of this post-plane stuff in 2004 is really legitimately happening. Obviously not in the same context of what's going on in 2007, because all the scenes we've seen in 2007 have the island actually still existing, not being sunk, whereas it was sunk in the 2004 timeline. So maybe this is sort of a loophole for Jacob somehow, is that he only dies in this alternate timeline that's going on in 2007. Jacob then would not have been killed by Ben in the 2004 alternate timeline that we were introduced to in this episode. However, Jacob might have died by some other means if he was sunk along with the island. Who knows? I don't know. What's your thought on this, Master Knack? You've been quiet. What do you think's going on about with all of this? And like, I don't know. I mean, well, what do you think about Juliet's comment? How about that? That it worked.
I'm not sure how she'd know that. I've actually been looking up some things on Wikipedia. I've been looking at a map that Rousseau drew of the island. I could be entirely off, but there is a large, what got me to start thinking of it was when I was talking about earlier the atom bomb tests that the U.S. did in the 1946, how it sunk ships up to 1,800 yards away. And 1,800 yards is only the length of about 1 mile, and the island is way bigger than that. So the idea that it could have sunk the island just seems, again, ridiculous. But looking at a map of the island drawn by Rousseau, and I don't know where in the relation to the Swan this might be, but on the south side of the island, there is a crater. And I don't know how big this might be, but could the crater potentially be caused by the bomb explosion? And if that's the case, you know, maybe this is showing that it did happen in the past and that something else sunk the island.
That's interesting. Okay, yeah. Let me think about that for a second. So they got to the island in 2004. Rousseau had been there for quite a while, and she mapped there being a crater on the island. And she actually came to the island after 1977. We know that for sure. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was in the 80s that Rousseau and her team came to the island.
Right.
And...
Well,
so,
how old is Alex in 2004? Is she supposed to be 18 or?
Well.
Or like 16? We know she's a teenager at least.
Yeah. I think she's supposed to be a teenager. I don't remember if they actually gave her birth date exactly. But I know I've looked it up on Lostpedia before, and it's a little bit weird. Some parts of the timeline related to Daniel Rousseau and Alex kind of are a little bit, you know, like there might be some things there that might be wrong.
We know sometime in the 80s, though.
Yeah. And I think it was late 80s, if I'm not... I don't know. Okay, I'm just going to have to look at Lostpedia.
Anyway, maybe I'm totally off, but... It could be showing from the bomb. That could be from the bomb explosion. Something else caused the island to sink. I don't know. I might be totally off.
Okay. Well, according to Lostpedia, I don't know how they got this figure, but they say the date of birth for Alex is January 1989, and her date of death is December 27th, 2004, which was when Kimi shot her. So, I don't know whether that 1989 date of birth for Alex is accurate. Just because, like I said, I think there were some kind of weird things going on with the timeline here. But in any case, yeah. So she was supposed to be, I guess, let me see. She was born in 1989. So she would have been actually almost 16. she wouldn't have been quite 16 yet. She would have been, like, assuming that this January, you know, month is even accurate, then she would be just about to turn 16 when she was killed. Which, that, and that does make sense. You know, that's probably where they get the, at least the approximate date. I don't know where they got January from. But the fact that when they get to the island in 2004, when Flight 815 crashes on the island, if Saeed's math is correct, that the Daniel Rousseau's broadcast loop has been going for 16 years, then that would definitely make sense with Alex being almost 16, because Danielle didn't have the baby until a little while after she was on the island. So that does make sense, more or less. Anyways, so yeah, I guess it is plausible that, you know, when Danielle came to the island, there could have already been some sort of explosion. But on the other hand, that whole timeline with Oceanic 815 crashing on the island is a different timeline from the one where the Swan Hatch, from the one where the, oh gosh, I don't know. It's hard to say because there, you know, Pierre Chang refers to this incident, and the season 5 finale is called The Incident, and which leads us to believe that the incident is something that happened, and then Dharma still continued on somehow after that point. And yet, yeah. You know, Oceanic, I don't know, the Oceanic survivors find the Swan Hatch, and it's intact, and that's not where the crater is. So the crater theory, I think, is busted, you know, to use Mythbusters terminology. The crater, if the bomb went off, if Juliet blew up the bomb and that's what created the crater, if that's what created the crater, then that the crater would have had to be right where the Swan Hatch was. And obviously that wasn't the case in up through season 5 in that particular timeline.
Right.
I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody at this point, but yeah. So I don't think that's the same crater. That's an interesting, that was a good thought though. But okay. Yeah, I don't really know. All right. So enough with that. Now I've got to find where it was in my notes again. Okay, so.
Well, anyway, I guess, you know, as you said, that was busted. I guess it goes to show, like, even an atom bomb couldn't make a blast. I mean, the island is obviously miles and miles long and wide. I mean, even an atom bomb couldn't make a blast, or hydrogen bomb, whatever, big enough to somehow sink the entire island. It would cause a lot of damage for sure, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's probably plausible. I mean, who knows? The writers obviously take an awful lot of liberties with an awful lot of things, not the least of which is time travel. And so I wouldn't be too surprised if they did end up, I mean, if it did turn out that in one timeline the bomb did take out the island. But
Let's say it didn't sink the island. Let's say it left a huge secondary crater that exists only in its alternate timeline. If Richard Alpert walked by and saw this gigantic crater, you know, he would have no choice but to think that they were all dead, which would then make sense with his statement in 2007. So it would be interesting to see if Richard sees Jin and Hurley and all those guys, what he would say.
Okay, wait, no. Say that again, because
if the bomb did go off and create a secondary crater, you know, in this alternate timeline, Richard could have, you know, eventually, you know, gone to the Swan, seen the crater, and assumed they're all dead. Which then I said it would be interesting if he runs into them now that they're back in 2007, what he would say.
Well, but then again, see, the 2007 timeline, though, there's not a big crater where the Swan Hatch was. I mean, there's a crater, but it's from the implosion, obviously, from all the twisted metal and how it's all sucked it down to that hole. I mean, it's clear that the Swan Hatch imploded, which means that Desmond was there. And I mean, the 2007 timeline.
Makes it look like nothing happened.
There's only one 2007 timeline, and the 2007 timeline is the same one that's consistent with everything we've seen up through and including season 5. So the only timeline that's different is this strange version of 2004 where the plane didn't crash on the island. So when Richard Alpert told Sun that he saw all those people die 30 years ago, I don't know. If that was the incident, then obviously they survived, except for Juliet and the other folks probably disappeared and jumped to 2007. So I guess Richard could say, you know, he thought that that's what happened, was that somehow they died, although their bodies disappeared. And so I don't know why he wouldn't just say they went missing to Sun rather than watch them die.
Again, I guess this could be a stretch, but going back to Back to the Future, you know, ideas and theories. When Marty was in 1955, he changed the events that led to his dad meeting and falling in love with his mom. He was still alive, but he basically found out that if the course of events carried on the same timeline, then he would not exist. But he existed for a period of time after that. He saw himself in the photograph from 1985 disappearing. I don't know. I guess that's to say, maybe if events had carried out on their current course, like the bomb hadn't gone off yet in the past, if that makes sense at all, if events had carried on in their course, they would have died. But I guess the blowing up of the bomb changed that event, if that makes any sense at all.
Not much. Not to me. I mean, yeah, I mean, it changed time, but I mean, it basically created a rift. Like, it created, you know, two alternate realities, because they went back in time and they changed the past. And so now there's the future that they were in and now got shot back into for some reason. And there's also the future from 1977, the future of this alternate 2004, where the island is underwater. So I don't know. And, you know, by the way, as far as the photograph disappearing, that I would say that sort of thing is not consistent with what we've seen on Lost. Lost seems, at least in that one tiny little respect of how they portray time travel, time travel theory would seem to indicate, you know, again, there's different theories about how time travel would work. But, you know, the most logical time travel theory says that basically there would be alternate timelines, almost sort of like alternate dimensions, basically, if something like this were to happen, that you've got the original course of events and now you've got the changed course of events, and they're operating on two different parallel universes, kind of. They can both exist in, you know, but and both have really happened, but you know, anyways. So the photograph, like, you know, a person disappearing out of a photograph wouldn't happen, because if something like an event like that changed, then they would be
actually on the same timeline. In the Back to the Future sense, it's on the same timeline, where now we're dealing with two entirely separate ones.
Well, right, yeah, I mean, that's kind of sort of what I think I'm getting at here. But
whereas in Back to the Future, even if you change past events, it assumes you're on the same timeline, whereas this one seems to have spawned two entirely separate timelines.
Yes, except that weren't there multiple timelines, though? Like, when they went to the future and then they came back to the past?
Well, in that sense, in that sense of the quote-unquote different timeline, I mean, the events, I'm not explaining myself well, but I guess.
No, I kind of get it. I think I see what you're saying. They're not strictly in the same sense of the word different timeline.
When old Biff went back in time and gave young Biff the manual, it didn't create a coexisting timeline. It changed the only timeline. Whereas now in Lost, it almost seems like there's two coexisting timelines. There's not one single timeline.
Exactly. Well, and that's a weird thing too, because like, how are they going to, I mean, are there going to be two alternate endings of the show? I mean, like, is that how the whole series is going to end, with two endings? Like, there's two outcomes. There's what happened to the people that we've seen this whole time, and there's also the alternate reality of what if the island really had, you know, been blown up by Juliet. You know, I mean, that's weird.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get it. Why would they randomly introduce like some other alternate timeline if it's not that critical to the plot? I don't know. I mean, obviously we've got a whole season ahead of us, and I'm sure they'll explain why they did this. But as of right now, it's very weird that, basically that's exactly what it is that we've got two timelines. They're both real. They both exist, but in different, I guess you could say, different realities. They're like parallel universes would be a way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. All right. But let's see what we've got here. Okay. So Miles tells Sawyer that Juliet said it worked. I wrote in my notes, so then where are they trapped? Well, we know that they're actually in 2007. We kind of figure that out later. They traveled back to 2007. And I guess, again, we did get the hint from Jacob, but I didn't get it yet at the time in the episode. But all right. So they go to... So getting back to where Kate and Jack and Saeed are at the moment, they're with this group who's inside the walls surrounding the temple. They're out kind of outside around the temple. There's a man who speaks Japanese, and Cindy seems to understand what he's saying. She answers, and this is weird. I'm like, what the heck? Like, Cindy speaks Japanese? She's been on the island for 3 years and she knows Japanese fluently? What the heck? I don't know. It's weird that Cindy, like, got immediately integrated into the society of the others when she came to the island. And I still think that hasn't been completely... we may never get the full answer to what Cindy's deal is, like whether she had any affiliation with Jacob and, and the others prior to the plane, or whether she just decided that she was going to go along with them and agree with their, way of life and so forth after they kidnapped her. I mean, I don't know. It's whatever. Whatever the case is, we may never know the answer to that. But in any case, Cindy has been living with the others for 3 years, and she's currently living at the temple and knows Japanese somehow now. So there's this Japanese-speaking man, and he says something, and Cindy answers in English that they were on the first plane, Oceanic Flight 815, with me. And so they get out their guns and they're about to shoot them. And Hurley says, wait, Jacob sent us. And then they ask him for proof. And he thinks, and they pull, put their guns up again. And he says, wait, no, the guitar case. So they open the guitar case and there's this giant ankh inside. Again, the ankh is a symbol that looks a lot like a cross, but it's got a loop at the top rather than a straight line at the top. And we've seen ankhs a number of times. If you remember, Amy was one of the Dharma folks. She, and also apparently Ethan Rom's mother, even though I don't know. Anyways, so so Amy had an Ankh necklace, and also the Toweret statue, which is now just the four-toed foot statue, had Ankhs in its hands. The Ankh is kind of often viewed as an ancient Egyptian symbol. And so in any case, there's this giant Ankh, and inside of it, well, of course, the Japanese man breaks it open, and Hurley's like, going, dude, what are you doing? But there's a note inside. And somehow the Japanese-speaking man knows this. He just automatically knows that if he breaks open this Ankh, there will be a note inside. I don't know. But and then he's reading the note in Japanese so that we don't know what the heck he's saying. And he asks their names. He's got a translator, by the way, who kind of translates for him. And they all say their names, and then they ask about Saeed, who obviously can't answer for himself. And Jack answers for him. And then the Japanese-speaking man starts to walk away, and Hurley asks what the notes what the note says. And the translator tells Hurley that the paper said that if Saeed dies, quote, we're all in a lot of trouble, end quote. So that's interesting given what happens a little bit after that in the show. So getting back to the 2004 alternate timeline, Jin is apprehended in the airport for taking too much money undeclared. And Sun is given the opportunity to admit that she speaks English, and she says no English. And then getting back to 2007, the translator, well, they take Saeed's body into the temple. The translator says, the water isn't clear. It happened. And I don't know what in the world that meant. Does anybody have any theories on that? The water isn't clear. It happened. Or did I mishear that?
I thought maybe something to do with Jacob dying. Was my guess.
Well, maybe, but see, they didn't know that Jacob was dying, though.
Well, that's true. Well, my initial thought was just maybe his death had something to do with tainting the water. And that's why the Japanese-speaking man, you know, stuck his hand in it to kind of test to see if the water would work. Because, you know, obviously it had some healing property and didn't seem to work anymore.
Well, yeah, now that's an interesting thing. Because, so he cuts his hand, sticks it in the water, and it's not immediately healed. But then they've got to hold Saeed under the water for, like, until the hourglass empties out to heal him. Like, I don't get it. Like, I don't know. I mean,
well,
this
that
is
might
a mystery
be the
island,
for,
I guess. But
that might be the reason why he said there's great risk in it. I mean, he said that before putting Saeed, that there's a risk. Maybe because, well, it doesn't seem to be working right. We could try, but there's a risk that he won't survive.
But what does he mean it happened? The translator says the water isn't clear. It happened. At least that's what I wrote in my notes. I was trying to write down what he said very quickly and also pay attention to what came after that. But I'm pretty sure that's what he said. The water isn't clear. It happened.
Right.
But they didn't know. I mean, they were surprised when Hurley said, dude, didn't you know that Jacob's dead? So they didn't even realize that, because once they found that out,
well,
then they
true.
Started to panic. Anyway, so I have no idea what that line meant. Maybe we'll get a hint as to what that means eventually. But so the Japanese man cuts his hand after that and puts it in the water. And then they say, if we do this, there are risks. And that line made me think of when young Ben was healed. Do you remember when Saeed shot young Ben and Kate, was it Kate and Jack? Took him to Richard Alpert and said, you know, you've got to do something to help him out, or he's going to die. And then somebody one of the others commented to Richard Alpert that there would be, he said something like, there'll be consequences, you know, something about there being consequences of taking Ben to the temple to, you know, presumably be healed. I don't know what those consequences are. I used to think maybe it would have something to do with, you know, Ben kind of becoming a bad person in some way. I don't know. But now we have a lot more context as to what the temple is and who it represents. Obviously, it's affiliated with Jacob rather than the smoke monster, even though we know the smoke monster likes to hang out underneath the temple for some reason. I don't know. So in any case, the water isn't clear. They say it happened. But then they say there will be consequences. If we do this, there are risks. Meaning, like, if we try to heal Saeed. Then they hold Saeed under the water until the hourglass runs out. Saeed apparently dies. And according to Jacob's note, if Saeed dies, we're all in a lot of trouble. So that sounded kind of scary. for Saeed to apparently be dead. Now, with Saeed being dead, Jack, of course, comes over. He's the doctor. And he starts giving chest compressions, just like he did to Charlie. You remember when Ethan Rom hung Charlie up in a tree, and Jack and Kate, you know, find Charlie, they get him down, and Jack starts doing the chest compressions. And he does it over and over and starts pounding on Charlie's chest and all these other silly things. And Kate is screaming at him, "Jack, stop, stop, leave him alone, he's gone." And yet Jack continues on, and Kate is just, you know, really upset about this. And then guess what? Charlie comes back to life. Well, what happens in this scene with Saeed? Jack starts giving chest compressions just like he did to Charlie. Kate tells him to stop like she did with Charlie. I guess she didn't learn her lesson that she should just trust the doctor who's giving chest compressions. Anyway, but stupidly, Jack listens to Kate. It's like, what, Jack, didn't you learn something from when you saved Charlie's life when you ignored Kate's advice to stop giving chest compressions? And so, for some reason, I guess Jack doesn't care as much about Saeed. I don't know what the deal was there. But he's just like, whatever, okay, I guess Saeed's dead. I'm not even going to try anymore. What in the heck? That either that's poor writing or that's poor writing. I don't know. But I can't understand.
I disagree. I almost think in a way that he's lost his desire to try to fix people or whatever that he used to have. I mean, I think realizing that he messed up and his plan didn't work has almost made him almost, I guess, not entirely apathetic, because he did attempt to save him, but
okay, no, I get that. But then how does that explain why Kate is such an idiot and she wants Saeed to die?
Well,
I mean, she saw this exact same scenario play out with Charlie, and she, you know, I mean, she was totally wrong about Charlie, and Jack went way farther, you know, with his attempts to save Charlie, and you know, Kate was totally wrong, and now she's screaming the same thing at Jack, getting him to stop, and Jack goes along with it. Like, they both, I mean, like, I get what you're saying about Jack. Maybe, like, he had, I don't know, something snapped in his brain, and he realizes he's really screwed things up, but what about Kate? I mean, why wouldn't she want Jack to potentially save Saeed the way that Jack saved Charlie? Anyway,
yeah.
All right, enough complaining about that. So,
however, before you continue, I should probably get going myself.
All right, yeah, it's after 2 a.m., 2:10 a.m. I think we still have some people here, possibly, who are from other time zones, too, who are
staying. There's a few in the chat room, yeah. Yeah, I'll let you do a quick wrap-up of the end of the episode. So it's been fun. Hopefully, at least, you know, a couple more times I can join later on in the season.
All right, yeah, it was great having you, and, like, you know, you're always welcome back anytime you can make it.
All right, thanks, Josh. Good night.
All right, good night. So, let's see, where was I? Okay, so I was complaining about Jack and Kate and how they killed Saeed. Or at least, you know, didn't try hard enough to save him. So, 2004, post-plane in this alternate reality, alternate timeline of events. Saeed looks at Nadia's photograph, and Kate tries to escape the airport without being identified, but the guards are looking at a paper, presumably, probably her photograph. And by the way, Heath, another lost podcaster, I believe, was hanging out with us in the chat, and he's left. And we only have a few people, I think, left in the chat. We've got Bailey Bearer, Ratface, and Jenny Lynn. And I don't know if we've got anybody else who's still with us, but... all right. So Kate's trying to escape. They're looking at probably her photograph. Kate makes it outside, and she sees the marshal stupidly. I mean, she's not looking, at least even looking in the opposite direction. She's sitting there, standing there, like staring at the air marshal and just waiting for him to turn around and look at her face, you know? And so anyway, that was kind of a silly thing too. So she starts running and she ducks in a cab, and who's in the cab? Well, this is interesting because the driver is, I don't know the actor's name. I don't remember it. The actor on Heroes who plays the puppet master guy, who is frequently seen with Claire on Heroes, which I don't really watch anymore. My wife still watches it, but he frequently shows up in scenes with Claire, this puppet master character. Well, guess who else is in the car? I mean, if that's not some sort of like weird crossover foreshadowing weirdness, I don't know what is. But yeah, so sure enough, the taxi cab driver is this guy from Lost who is frequently seen with the blonde main character named Claire. And Claire is in the back seat with Kate in the taxi cab. So that's pretty crazy. And so I'm starting to actually be interested in what's going to go on with this timeline. So obviously, you know, we're not going to know anything more about that until later in the season, at least with what happens with Kate and Claire. There was a funny comment in the chat earlier, though. Who was it that said it? Ah, yeah. So Josh, a.k.a. Spivvy, Lost Flashbacks Josh, said, "I'll wager $5 that Kate holds Claire hostage, and then she gives birth, and Kate helps." And then Congested said, "Kate adopts him in the cab." So, yeah, probably not, but it's pretty hilarious that Kate and Claire end up hanging out together, just like they became friends, you know, on the island and so forth. All right. So, 2007, Island. Hurley tells the Japanese-speaking guy and his translator, and we've, of course, interestingly enough, Hurley is smart enough to figure out that the guy who is speaking Japanese doesn't, you know, he can understand English, and so Hurley actually points that out, and the man actually speaks in English and explains that he doesn't like speaking English because, oh, he said something funny like it hurts his tongue or, I don't know, something like that. So he just prefers to have somebody else translate for him into English. But I thought that was pretty clever of Hurley to be able to figure something like that out, because Hurley usually isn't the sharpest tack in the box, or, you know, sharpest nail in the shed or whatever I'm trying to say. So Hurley figures this out. So apparently he's gotten a lot smarter in the past, you know, maybe the time jump made him smarter. I don't know. I'm just joking. Sort of. So Hurley tells the Japanese-speaking man and the translator that Jacob is dead, and they're shocked, and they look at him, and he's like, "Dude, you guys didn't know?" or something like that. And so they start going into panic mode. They start pouring out ash around the complex, around the perimeter, around the temple. And they fire a warning rocket into the air. Now, what exactly they thought that was going to accomplish, I don't know. Maybe the warning rocket just means to, is supposed to mean to all the others on the island, hey, get back to the temple because something bad has happened. Or it could maybe specifically even means that Jacob has been killed. I don't know. But in any case, Richard Alpert on the other side of the island sees this rocket, this warning rocket. And well, I guess we'll get to that part of it in a moment, but so they fire the warning rocket. The translator explains to Hurley that they're not trying to keep them in. They're trying to keep him out. And Hurley asks who he means. And of course they don't give us his name, which really made me mad because I want to know his name so that I can stop calling him all these other weird things. So anyway, but they do cut to a scene with fake Locke speaking with Ben. And so fake Locke tells, I'm just going to call him the Nemesis, and especially for this scene, because otherwise it's going to be way too confusing. So the Nemesis says to Ben, John Locke was very confused when you killed him. And the Nemesis says that John Locke's last thought in John's head when Ben killed him was, I don't understand. And the Nemesis says that John was the only one who didn't want to leave the island, and the only one who realized how pitiful the life he left behind actually was. And Ben asks the Nemesis, what do you want? And the Nemesis says, well, that's the great irony, Ben, because, and it's so funny, by the way, hearing him speaking in Locke's voice and saying this, and sort of talking with kind of similar mannerisms to Locke's. In any case, so the Nemesis in the guise of Locke says, well, that's the great irony, Ben, because I want the thing John Locke didn't. I want to go home. So we apparently learn from this that his home is not on the island. Or if it is on the island, maybe it's the temple. There's another theory, which I need to write down because I just thought of that. Okay, so 2007 on the island, still in 2007 on the island, I should say, jumping to the different part of the island. Now, Hurley is talking to Saeed's apparently dead body, and he says, goodbye, dude. If you ever want to talk, I'm around. Miles shakes his head for some reason, and Hurley says, what? Miles says, nothing. He says the word nothing. So, this kind of, it made me wonder, you know, what exactly was going on in Miles' head? Why was he shaking his head? Was he shaking his head because he was thinking, you know, that's weird that I can't hear Saeed's thoughts? Or, and so maybe he's not dead? Or was he hearing the thoughts of somebody else who is going to enter Saeed's body? So here's another a theory about that anyway, is Saeed, you know, we're going to get to it in a minute anyway, but Saeed wakes up at the end and says, what happened? What if he is Jacob in Saeed's body? Just like Jacob's Nemesis took the body of and form, at least, didn't actually take his actual body, but took the form of Locke's dead body. Perhaps Jacob has the same ability, and maybe he can take, or a similar ability, I should say, because in this case, he would actually be reanimating the body of Saeed and using the exact body. But, I don't know. I guess that's a possibility anyway. It's a theory that maybe Jacob came back into a physical form by taking Saeed's body. That's a possibility anyway. But that, it kind of made me wonder if something fishy was going on there. It was weird to believe that Saeed was dead anyway, just like the whole way that they were treating Saeed, like with the camera angles and everything, like it just, and dwelling on it the way, the exact way that they were, it didn't seem like Saeed was really dead. I mean, it seemed fishy to me. And then they have this obviously fishy thing with Miles kind of shaking his head, which they don't really explain what happened there. But in any case, let's see. So back to we go back to then to 2004 after the plane lands successfully in LAX. we find out that Jack's father's casket, so Christian Shepherd's casket, was never on the plane. So I don't know if this was only in this alternate timeline, or if we're, I mean, because obviously there are a lot of things that are different in this timeline. And that, you know, for example, Desmond being on the plane, totally, totally different. And so it's possible that for some other random reason, Christian Shepherd's casket was not on this particular plane, and maybe it really was on the original Oceanic 815 from season one. So I don't know. That's a bit confusing. I mean, obviously we see the body of Christian Shepherd wandering around on the island. And you know, interestingly enough, I don't think it's entirely clear at this point whether this fake Christian Shepherd is a good guy or a bad guy. I mean, does he work with Jacob, or is he actually on the Nemesis's side? Because, you know, we've got Christian Shepherd encouraging John Locke to leave the island, and of course John Locke ultimately he dies and ends up becoming the conduit, you know, the sort of the part of the master plan for Jacob's nemesis to ultimately be able to kill Jacob. So was Christian Shepherd in fact the nemesis? Was he kind of the smoke monster taking the form of Christian Shepherd? Smoke monster being the same person we know now as the nemesis. Is that what was going on? Was the nemesis encouraging John Locke to leave the island, knowing that he would come back, you know, would only come back as a dead body and give him an easy way to sort of cheat the system and trick people enough that he could win this battle? I don't know. In any case, so so Christian Shepherd's casket, the coffin was not on the plane, at least in this alternate timeline where they do land in LAX. Now, I don't know. I mean, this is interesting. Was his coffin not on the plane, or did something different happen? I mean, I guess there may be other possibilities there, too. It's probably not something like, well, Jack's dad never died or something like that, because, I mean, in keeping completely in the context of this timeline, you know, Jack knows that he's coming back from Sydney because his dad just died and he's taking his body home and they're about to have the funeral. Well, interestingly enough, I don't know. I mean, I can't remember exactly. I know there was a lot of speculation about what really went on with the casket in Oceanic Flight 815. There was apparently an empty casket when Jack is bashing, you know, this casket, which appears to be his father's casket, or at least that's kind of what we assume, because he's been seeing apparitions of his dad, and then there's no body inside the casket, and so Jack smashes the casket. This was all in season one. I think White Rabbit was the episode where all of that happened. In any case, so I don't know. Who knows? I suppose it's possible that it's just in this alternate timeline in any case where the casket never made it on the plane. So I guess we shouldn't dig too deep into something that might not really be there at all. But in any case, so Locke, it turns out that his knives also got lost and somehow on the plane. And, you know, either they didn't make it on the plane or they got lost and maybe somebody else took them. Who knows what happened? But Ratface in the chat says, Jack's dad is a bad guy because he told Son to wait and go with the fake lock, a.k.a. the man in black. Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Well, I would tend to agree with that. I think that absolutely makes sense. I am curious, though, whatever happened to Claire on the island? I mean, we still never found out whether she actually died or what, but all of a sudden she starts acting weird and hanging out in Jacob's cabin, which we now know, by the way, is actually the Nemesis's cabin with Christian Shepherd. Now, see, all of that is starting to make sense. Very interesting. I'd forgotten until you mentioned that Christian Shepherd, so-called, was actually in that cabin. So, interesting. I'm just adding things to my notes here real quick. Okay. Good comment again, Ratface. So, Locke... So this is in the airport, in this alternate timeline in 2004. Locke says, how could they know where your father is? They didn't lose your father, they just lost his body. And of course, he's kind of referring to, you know, the afterlife. Jack, of course, being a man of science, Locke being a man of faith. But Locke says that his spinal condition is irreversible. Jack says nothing is irreversible. And he says, if you ever want a consult, just give me a call. It's on the house. So Jack is offering his services and offering to fix John Locke and actually, you know, at least Jack thinks that he can make John Locke better, which if anybody could, I would guess it would be Jack, since he's supposed to be the master spinal surgeon and all that. So that's really interesting for this alternate timeline. You know, maybe Locke could end up walking after all. Okay, let's see. Back to 2007 on the island. So this is when Richard sees the rocket. So we get another little bit of evidence that, you know, this is all going on at the same time. Richard sees the rocket, and right after this, the Nemesis comes out, and they point guns at him. Richard tells them not to shoot, and the Nemesis says, "Hello, Richard. It's good to see you out of those chains." So this is a little hint again that, you know, maybe Richard is a pirate or, you know, from the Black Rock or something like that. Which also kind of, I didn't mention earlier, maybe leads to the theory that the Nemesis is in the same sort of situation as Richard Alpert, in that, you know, maybe he actually was on the Black Rock too, and that something changed to him. Like, just like Richard Alpert apparently was changed to be immortal by Jacob, maybe this fake Locke, you know, Nemesis guy was changed somehow as well. And maybe he was also once somebody who was on the Black Rock. Although, no, that can't be the case. Scratch all of that. That doesn't make any sense because he was on the beach with Jacob when the Black Rock came. So no, that wouldn't be the case. But in any case, it is obvious though that Jacob and that the Nemesis, it's getting way too late for me, that Richard and the Nemesis have some sort of history. They sort of know each other at least. Also evidenced by the fact that Richard looks at him and says, you know, like, is it really you? Or I can't believe it's you. And the Nemesis says, me, and he knocks Richard out. Now there's this weird line where as you fake Locke, you know, the Nemesis, picks up Richard, sticks him up, throws him over his shoulder, very John Locke-esque, by the way. He turns and says to all of the, you know, Alana's crew, there, you know, everyone's who's holding a gun at him and everyone who's standing around, all these others, he says, "I am very disappointed in all of you." And so what does that mean? I mean, does it mean that that they didn't figure him, he's disappointed that they didn't figure out who he was? That they took the wrong side, that they shouldn't have been working for Jacob, but they should have been on his side. So in any case, I guess we'll probably find out more about what the Nemesis might have meant by that eventually. But anyway, he picks up Richard and walks off. Then we go back to the temple. The translator is trying to get Jack to go with them. They say they need to speak to him privately. Jack puts up a fight for some reason. And then as they begin to get in the scuffle, Hurley, you know, yells for Jack. And lo and behold, Saeed wakes up and says, "What happened?" So again, and there's a couple possible theories there. It could be that this is Saeed who came back to life and it just took a while for the water, whatever that was, to take effect. Or perhaps, as I also suggested, it could be Jacob in Saeed's body. And as I think Congested is actually the one who brought up that theory. So that's that. All right, let's get into a couple of quick Easter eggs. And after that, we will have a kind of light spoiler section, I guess you could call it, where we'll discuss the preview. But first, Easter eggs. Okay, so there were a couple of books in this episode of Lost. There was Desmond's book on the plane, which the author's name is much clearer than the title of the book. But I believe that I've figured out the title as well. The author's name is Salman Rushdie. And it's a 1990 children's book. I have no idea why Desmond is reading a children's book. Unless it's a children's book in the same sense as like Harry Potter is a children's book, where a lot of adults read Harry Potter too. I don't know. But in any case, the book is titled Haroun, H-A-R-O-U-N, and the Sea of Stories. And I'll put up a link to a screenshot in the show notes, and also a link to the Wikipedia article for this story. There's a lot in the Wikipedia article, so I don't really have time to sit and analyze it right now, obviously, and figure out whether there might be any interesting parallels to what's going on the show. But there's also another book. There's a book that was found underground. And not surprisingly, it was written in French because that's also where they found Montan and so forth. And so this book is the French edition of Fear and Trembling, a book by Soren Kierkegaard. And I'm probably butchering the pronunciation of that name, but in any case, who is a philosopher, not too surprisingly, since very, very frequently philosophers are referenced on the show in some way or another. And I don't know much about this book either, but again, I will certainly put up the Wikipedia link to some more information about Soren Kierkegaard, and if there's a Wikipedia article for the book, I'll try to find that too. Okay, and one more little Easter egg. We have Rose's magazine on the plane. She's reading Weekly Woodsman magazine, which is kind of funny. It seems a little perhaps out of place for Rose, but perhaps not. I don't know. But the really cool thing is in one of the shots, we get a glimpse of this advertisement in the magazine. And at the top of the page, it says, "The truth is out there," and there's a UFO next to it, next to the text, which if anybody, you know, ever used to be a fan of the X-Files, you'll instantly recognize that, I'm sure the truth is out there. If I'm not mistaken, and it's been a long time since I've watched very many episodes of The X-Files, but I think that's exactly what Mulder had as on a poster. It said the truth is out there, and it had a little UFO on it. Well, that's kind of what this advertisement looked like in the magazine. But this is a double Easter egg, a double X-Files reference, as a matter of fact, because in the bottom left corner of that page of the advertisement, there's a box of cigarettes, and the brand on the box is Morley, which you'd probably have to be a little bit more of an X-Files geek to know this. I just happened to see an episode where they focused up, you know, close on the cigarette box. The smoking man, or cancer man, as he's also called, who is kind of the boss at the FBI, the boss of Mulder and Scully, or the boss's boss. I don't know, something like that. It's not as direct, not their direct boss, because that's a different character. Anyway, the smoking man. He's some mysterious guy, anyway, that they deal with. And in any case, the brand of cigarettes that he smoked was Morley. And so we've got this advertisement that says the truth is out there. It's got a UFO, looks like Mulder's poster, and it's an advertisement apparently for Morley brand cigarettes. So whoever put in this prop was giving a gigantic shout out to the X-Files and to, of course, fans of the X-Files who would notice this. All right, so that'll do it, I think, from me for Easter eggs so far. And, of course, there are hieroglyphics in the temple and things like that. I haven't seen any screenshots of those yet. I don't know if anyone's even going to make any attempt to try to translate any of the hieroglyphs and things like that. But one other little detail. Ratface in the chat points out that there was no mention whatsoever of Michael or Walt or Vincent during the whole flight. Not when the plane landed. We never saw any hint of anybody in that family, which is interesting. maybe the explanation for that is that it's just something similar to Shannon not being on the plane, for example. I guess they were showing with that example, and perhaps the real reason is they couldn't get the actress. I don't know. And I imagine that was probably the case with at least one of the, you know, of Michael or Walt. Now, the actors that play those characters. Harold Perrineau and Malcolm David Kelly. There we go. So, but now it is interesting to note, though, by the way, that the pre-season six, like the premiere episode that they show on the beach, you know, in Hawaii, where they roll out the red carpet and have all of these lost stars show up. Harold Perrineau actually was there. And I don't know whether he was just there totally unrelated to anything having to do with the season, but just to kind of catch up with old friends, or maybe they invited him to be there. But yeah, it is interesting though that we didn't see Michael. That's a very good point. I mean, I wonder if he'll be in the season. It's funny for him to have shown up at the party on the beach. I don't know if he does every year, regardless of whether he's in the season or not. Yeah, good observation. Now, I have seen some sort of like promotional things for season six, like background images on, I think, ABC's official website. They have this sort of background image thing that's got all kinds of different characters from all different seasons. I think even including Shannon, and I know including Michael. I know he was one of the people on there. I don't remember specifically whether Walt was. I know Vincent was in fact on this image. You can probably find that if you go to ABC's official website and look at wherever the lost section is on there. I just happened upon that recently, and it is interesting to note that Michael and Vincent and possibly Walt, they don't remember for sure, are definitely on that. So I don't know if they're going to make an attempt to show all the old characters, or if this was just sort of a a hint that we're going to be revisiting these characters' you know, potential timelines. You know, what if the plane had landed? Even though this is not exactly what if the plane had landed, because obviously some events are different with this particular 2004 timeline, but, you know, seeing a possible outcome of some of the things that could have happened had the plane landed, or another way of looking at it, as the plane actually has landed in this alternate timeline that was created. Okay, so let's get into the preview for... I would say next week's episode, but you never know. A lot of times they take clips from two or even three episodes sometimes in the future, it seems like. So the things that stood out to me that I kind of took notes on were... And this, you know, potentially if you think the previews are spoilers, then this would be the time to tune out. If you don't consider the preview to be a spoiler, then no spoilers on this podcast this week. So the preview, Sawyer says to somebody, don't come after me. Jacob's nemesis or fake Locke picks up a knife. Kate says, I can bring him back. And maybe she's talking about Sawyer, since Sawyer says, don't come after me. That seems exactly like something that Kate would do, would be to go after him. Jack says to Kate, be careful. And I wrote down Jack, but I don't know if I meant to write Jack, but somebody says, who are you? Kate says, did he say, how are you? Oh, I think I wrote that down wrong. I think it might have been how are you was the line. In any case, I don't know. They do have this up on YouTube already. If you search for it, you can definitely find the preview. And Kate says he doesn't care about any of us. And Jim says, who do you care about? Presumably talking to Kate. So that's it. And I need to go. It's about 10 minutes till 3 o'clock a.m., and I've got work tomorrow. So thanks to everybody who participated in the chat tonight. We surprisingly still have 5 people in the chat. Ratface is the only non-guest person who's still here, and I appreciate you joining us, Ratface. For lack of a better name for you. I feel bad calling you Ratface. It sounds like I'm insulting you or something, but if that's your nickname, then I guess it's not an insult. So in any case, thanks to everybody for joining us. It's been a lot of fun, and it went awfully long, as I kind of suspected that it would, but I hope that I don't have too many people hating me who listen to the MP3 and have to suffer through a 2-hour and almost 45-minute unedited episode. Hopefully I can edit it down a little tiny bit. But all right, so as I said, probably see you next week. I'm going to try to do a live show when I'm in San Francisco, if I can watch Lost live. If I cannot get Lost, if I cannot watch Lost live where I am staying in San Francisco, then I will not do a live show next week. But either way, I will absolutely do a live show the week after that. After all, again, I am putting my money out there and ordering the basic channels so that I can watch Lost live in the comfort of my own home, so that I can do this live right after the episode airs podcast just for you guys, the fans. So thanks for being a fan of the show, and till next time, stay lost and namaste. If you have a product or service that you'd like to market to thousands of Lost fans, find out how you can become a sponsor of this podcast. Send an email to thelostmeister@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Please check out the Josh Meister's Lost blog for links related to this podcast. The address again is thelostmeister.com.
That's thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Thank you, and namaste.